Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And a very warm welcome to the Lizelle Wellbeing Show. Now, this week, I am joined by Peter Vollebaan, a forester and author of best-selling books, The Hidden Life of Trees, The Inner Life of Animals, and his latest book, The Heartbeat of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. Well, when compared with trees, we are relative newcomers to this planet. While humans may have been around for 300,000 years, scientists estimate that there have been trees on Earth for perhaps 3 million years. Well, Peter is going to be here to tell us more about our ancient neighbours, uncover their secret social behaviours, and explore what the research says about whether they can hear, feel, sleep, and even store memories. And from improved immunity to better heart and mental health, we'll also be diving into the well-being benefits that spending a little time in our local park or forest or even a single tree in the garden can offer us. It really is a fascinating listen, and I do hope it will encourage all of us to get out this weekend and go and find just a small bit of green space or bigger to enjoy. And don't forget that if you'd like to watch our chat today, the video podcast is available to view on YouTube on the Lizelle Wellbeing channel. And as always, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on Instagram, perhaps after the show. So without further ado, let's welcome Peter. So Peter, a very warm welcome on the podcast. Thank you for joining us from the forests of Germany. Is that right?
That's right. I'm here in the old Forster house, which is surrounded by trees. I'm looking at an old birch tree, very big one, but there are 80 other trees surrounding me.
Wow, well, very appropriate. And, you know, I have to ask, what is it about trees? Where did your early fascination begin?
My early fascination was about nature, not about trees. I was more interested in animals like spiders, frogs, or water turtles, and animals like that. And yeah, because, okay, trees, that were surrounding environment, but more interesting were animals. Or when it comes to tree, the firewood, of course, because we made illegal fire in the forest as children.
Oh, really? So did you grow up in a forest environment then?
It was a small town outside the then capital Bonn, which was the former capital of Germany. And my father was working in the financial ministry. And so we were in a little town outside. I went with my bicycle out in the forest or to lakes and doing things like that, but not concerning trees.
Right. But then you ended up working in forestry, is that right?
Yeah. After school, I thought about studying biology. And then I read an article in the newspaper that the German Forest Commission were searching for students. I said, OK, forester, that's someone like, let's say, like an ant, Lord of the Rings, a tree keeper. And I thought, yeah, that may be cool. And then I started studying forestry. But afterwards, it turned out that a forester is a little bit more like a tree butcher.
So is that kind of like tree surgery? Is it a lot to do with felling trees rather than conserving them? Or does a forester do both?
Yeah, exactly. A forester should, concerning to the German laws, keep the forest, develop them to a more environmentally friendly spot. But in reality, it turned out that a forester is a timber producer, which is okay. But but it shouldn't be the main focus of the everyday life as a forester. But meanwhile, in Germany, it's all about big machines, the planting for new conifer plantations. It's about timber business. And that's not what I thought what a forester should do.
No. Well, when did you start to think about trees differently then? Because you went from somebody who was involved in kind of, you know, chopping them down and turning them into wood, firewood. And now your work is so extraordinarily different. I mean, it could not be more opposite, could it? What was your journey that made you look at trees in such a different way?
There are two points where things changed for me. The first was the first year out as a new forester, and I wondered what am I doing there? What for? Should I fell old beech trees, for example? We was told at university that it is good for the forest, and the forest gets healthier the more timber you harvest, which of course is crazy. But I believed that at that time. But when I came out in the forest, I thought, there's something wrong. And then I traveled around to forest enterprises which manage forests environmentally friendly. And I saw, it's working without clear cuts, without chemicals, without big machines. And that was one point when I changed management here. And the second was, I founded a burial forest where people can be buried in urns, and trees are somewhat like a living headstone. And the people which I guide through this forest, they said, look at this tree. It's bended like my life. It wasn't also always straight. And I, as a forester, at first thought, that's an ugly tree because it isn't straight. It's not expensive timber. I just thought about trees like ending in sawmills. And together with those people visiting this burial forest, I changed my view on forest again. And then I discovered things. As a forester, you usually don't look onto the ground. You look at the trunks, you look in the crown of the trees, but not on the ground. And together with the people, I discovered more and more wonders of the forest. For example, this old stump, the tree has been felled, estimated 400 or 500 years ago, and this stump was still living. And then I asked myself, how is it possible without any green leaf that this stump survives, because it burns sugar in the cells, when it's living, it needs energy. Where does it come from? And then we found the solution that were the surrounding trees supporting this old stump. And then I realized, as a forester, I was told that all trees compete, and as a forester, I'm the referee and I decide which one has to go. And in reality, it turned out no, there is no competition. There's cooperation. That's something completely different.
That is extraordinary, because in your book, which I have to say is the most lovely read, I highly, highly recommend it, you describe trees as social creatures. So can we expand here on how trees are social with each other?
Yeah, the first question perhaps is why should trees be social? Because many lay person like even me as a studied forester, thought that trees compete for a space, for light, for water, and so on. And trees have other needs. They need a cool climate, they need enough rain, and they can create their own climate. That's really crazy. And we have the latest research on forests in Europe that shows that intact old broadleaf tree forest can cool down the landscape more than 10 degrees on hot summer days. Then they can create more thunderstorms and a lot more rain. So they create their own climate. That's very important concerning climate change. But just as long as we let them undisturbed. And therefore trees are much interested in big communities, and therefore they help weakened, companions. or family members, they try to keep everyone as healthy as possible so that they form big communities. So they benefit from this, like we have benefits from the human society. And therefore, they try to keep every tree as long as possible alive.
So how would they do this then? If you've got individual trees planted in their own spots, okay, they're kind of next to each other, they're near, but how would they physically be able to help each other?
They grew their roots together. With the root tips, they are able to judge whether the neighboring tree, they do, yeah? That's long known. That's very long known. As a young forester, he came into contact with this knowledge, for example, but on a sad way. Till that time, something like Agent Orange was sprayed over German forests to get rid of beech and oak trees because modern foresters wanted to have conifer plantations.
Is that heartbreaking to hear that?
Yeah. It's heartbreaking to hear that, and we see it still to, up today, for example, in Western Canada, where the government says, no, we don't want to have too much birches and ashes and whatsoever. We want to have hemlock fir and Douglas fir and trees like that. So we were taught, and you can poison trees by helicopter spraying, or which is unhealthy for people too. And therefore, there was another method to poison them individually. There we were taught, when you poison a tree, because trees share everything, you poison also the neighboring trees. That was my first knowledge about how trees cooperate, on a very sad way, of course. But what I want to say is that's long known, that trees are cooperating by growing their root system together into each other, so they are physically connected. And they are able to judge, is it the same tree species, because they don't connect, a beech tree, for example, doesn't connect with an oak tree.
Does it know?
They even know, that's my family member, and there's a stronger connection.
Really? So if an oak tree has grown from an acorn, you know, that then the neighboring tree that's grown from the same tree will have more, a stronger connection with that one, will it?
Exactly. We think, that's crazy. How can trees figure out if this is a family member? But that's when we look at animals, we think, okay, that's no problem because they see it, they smell it, they hear it, and trees are able to taste, to smell, to hear, perhaps even to see. We don't know that exactly. So why shouldn't they figure out? Because it's an advantage to realize, it's a family member. I tell you something from Switzerland. Switzerland is researchers found out in a laboratory with plants in pots that those plants are able to visually realize if the neighboring plant is a family member, and then they bring their leaves a little bit away so that the neighboring plant gets more sunlight. So there's more and more evidence that plants are able to even to see if this is a family member.
That is just the most extraordinary thing. I mean, your book is called The Heartbeat of Trees. You know, you're almost painting them into some kind of mammalian creature. Do trees really have some kind of heartbeat? What do you mean by that?
Then I have to explain the research on which this is based. There were three scientists from Austria, Finland, and Hungary, and they tried to find out more about the sleeping behavior of trees, which sounds also crazy, but many, many plants have a sleeping behavior. For example, when you look in your garden, the flowers, they close their blossoms at nighttime. That's a sleeping behavior.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they made laser scans from birch tree and other trees, and they found out in wind still nights that they let hang their branches a little bit, around about 10 centimeters or so. And with a sunrise, the branches come up. But on the other hand, the water pressure in the trunk rises at night times, so the branches should rise too. But they go down. For what reason, we don't know. And by the way, they found out that the trunks shrinks a little bit, just about 0 point whatsoever millimeter, very, very small amount. and expand in a rhythm of 3 to 4 hours. And because no one knows today how the water comes up from the roots to the crown, that is a first evidence that there's somewhat like a heartbeat of trees.
Yes.
And I love this discovery.
That's amazing, like a bark beat almost. You've got this sort of just almost pumping fluid action, that rhythmic action. Isn't that extraordinary that, you know, these extraordinary things that have been growing around us for, you know, since the beginning of time, we're just beginning to discover their inner secrets, if you like.
Many biologists say that the time age of discovery is just to begin. So many, many things are unexplored. And we often think that plants are not very much more than green stones. But they are very much closer to animals than we thought. And I don't know if you don't know the main difference between animals and plants. Do you know the main difference? There are many differences, but the main difference.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. Is it cognitive function or the ability to move and run away?
No. Because, for example, the biggest buildings from beings on Earth made by animals is the Great Barrier Reef, for example. And that are corals, which are not able to move, like plants. They're sitting there like plants. So that's not the main difference. And many people don't know it or are not aware of it. The main difference is photosynthesis. Plants are able to create their own food. That's the main difference. And therefore, we regard them less worth. That's crazy.
They're cleverer than we are if they can be self-sustaining.
I'm not sure if they are cleverer. I don't know. They have abilities we don't have. And when we have a ranking in nature, plants should rank higher, because without plants, we wouldn't be here.
That's so true. Now, you mentioned in the book that trees can store memories and that they may even be able to pass memories on to their offspring. And how does that work? Is that to kind of improve their survival chances?
Yeah, we know that seedlings around their mother trees behave in the same way. For example, when it comes to a severe drought that we had in Germany the last 3 summers, then trees change their water management for the rest of their life. That means that they have a memory, that they remember these hard summers, these heavy droughts, and they change it. And you can see their seedlings change it too. Without a mother tree, they have to learn it the hard way on themselves. But we know also that they can pass their memories, the old trees, through epigenetic processes. And we know that we are doing the same. For example, that afterward generations also suffer from psychological traumata by epigenetical things. So that means that memories can be passed to the next generation through the genes. And that's exactly what trees do. They are learning, they have memories, and they give those new things to the next generation. So that's a good news, because that means that the trees can learn to deal with climate change, and that the next generation of trees is more resilient. And what we see here in Germany, for example, is that German foresters, they cut those trees, which seems to be weakened. I would say they are just learning. Let them learn. But they cut them. They clear cut the area, and then afterwards they replant a plantation with new trees, which are not told to how to behave in dry summer. So we have the same problem in the future again. And when you would leave up the learning process to the trees, we will see much faster, resilient new forest.
That's so interesting. I'd never thought about that. That's a different way, I guess, of looking at how plants adapt to change. You know, to actually say, well, actually they're adapting because they have their own internal memory system, and that's what they're passing on to their offspring. Maybe it thinks a bit of kind of your anthropomorphizing trees. Do you think there's a danger of that, or do you think we should actually be doing more of that?
I think we should do more of that, because what does it mean to anthropomorphize the things? I've learned this word because many times I've been confronted with this.
Okay.
But I think, yeah, right, we need more of this, because when you put all those emotional things, those comparisons out of text, then you have a text full of technical terms, the scientific language no one understands. When we want to be fair to the trees, we would have to explain it in treeish, but I'm not able to talk in treeish, so I have to use human language, and human language is full of emotions. For example, remember or imagine you would read a novel without emotional words.
No one would like to read it.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I know that you have talked about research, which was really interesting. I'm probably not going to pronounce this correctly, but it's the Arabidopsis tree, which revealed some clues that trees are actually able to hear. Is that right?
Yeah, trees may be able to hear. The problem is that in most cases, trees are too big for laboratories. And so many experiments are made with other plants. But there is strong evidence that they're able to hear with their roots, for example, where the water flows. That
right.
makes sense. Because in the root tips, there are brain-like structures. We think there's a strong evidence that is the brain of the tree. And the root tips are able to hear, there's the water, and we have to grow in this direction. Because water is the main resource of a tree. That's even more necessary than direct sunlight, for example. So
it
makes sense if we think about that trees are more than 300 million years on Earth, that they have developed a system to detect where water flows.
Yeah. Is it true that when we think about the tree roots, that the tree roots sort of mirror the size and shape and scale of the upper visible portion of the tree? Or did
no,
I just read that
true.
Somewhere and it's not true? Okay.
No, it's not true. And we ask these questions very often to forest students, and they say exactly the same. And I say, wow, I think there should be some other facts being told at university, because you can see it yourself. If you have a garden, you can sometimes see some tree roots growing through the grass because they become thicker and thicker over the years, like the trunk.
Yeah.
And so at some point, they're coming out of the grass. And you see, that are the roots from this tree because they have the same bark. And you can judge, that's from the birch tree, that's from, we have here Douglas fir, for example, or an apple tree or whatsoever. And then you see that the root system is at minimum twice as big in diameter than the crown. In some cases, even much, much bigger. Aspen trees, for example, have a very, very big root system. We have one here at the street to the next village. And we measured it out with students, and the crown of this tree is, let's say, around about 150 square meters, and the root system is around about 3,000 square meters, because you can see it from the little shoots.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it's amazing big, and you can see it from the little shoots coming out of the root system. That's very easy to detect an aspen root system because you have all those little shoots with the aspen leaves, and so you can judge it very clearly that this is from the aspen root system.
Wow, so I will never look at trees in the same way. You know, if you can imagine going into a park, I mean, we're fortunate in London, we have lots of really beautiful parks that were planted. The Victorians were very much into their trees. And just to think of that extraordinary network that must be covering, you know, the entire grassed area where all these trees are then connecting under the ground with this hidden, this whole hidden society. I mean, for us, are we able to communicate with trees? You know, we've established that they can communicate with each other, but as humans, can we communicate in some way with them?
I don't think it's many things are not proven, so I'm really careful in what I'm saying. But I think that there's not a real communication, which means in both ways. You ask a question, getting an answer in this way. But you can participate on tree communication. For example, on a hot summer day, when you walk through a conifer forest, you smell those gases, which I think it smells like a holiday in Spain. We think, that's really wonderful. And in reality, that is stress signaling between trees. They are warning each other from insect attacks or from dry weather or whatsoever.
Really?
And we think, wow, how wonderful it smells here.
Oh, no.
On the other hand, sorry for that, but there are also good smells for the trees, because when you're in an intact forest, for example, an oak or beech or whatsoever deciduous forest, then perhaps you don't smell it conscious, but your blood pressure sinks. When you're in an intact forest, which feels well, which is healthy, then your blood pressure sinks significantly in a healthy range, of course. And what you say conscious is, wow, it's nice here, I'm relaxing. And so your body corresponds to the tree communication, but not in the way that the trees say, wow, nice to see you, but that your body say, wow, that's a nice place, because it makes sense. Our ancestors, let's say 10,000 years ago, they need to feel with their instincts, this is a good place to settle. And good place to settle means a stable ecosystem which is intact, rich in animal life. And therefore, you need trees which are healthy, which can become very old. And you can smell this unconscious. But your body is reacting, and you say, wow, wonderful.
Yeah, our body instinctively knows it. And those sorts of forests then that we should be seeking out, they're filled with oak and birch. Is there a particular type of forest, if we want to get these amazing feelings of well-being, that we should be heading for?
That mustn't necessarily be a whole forest. It can also be a single tree, a single oak tree in the next city park or so. I think, important is the tree okay? And what's not okay, for example, what I have also seen in England and Scotland, those Sitka spruce plantations, for example, which are used for timber production. Those plantations, the trees are suffering. I wouldn't do a forest bath. It's the new expression for things like that, forest bathing, but you can do it under a tree. That means just relaxing without a purpose. You need a healthy tree. It can be the apple tree in your garden that can, and when you want to have more or a better effect, then you can go out in oak or beech or any native tree forest.
Native to wherever you are. So something that's naturally happy in its environment.
Exactly. And that's differing. For example, in the higher parts of Scotland, there you will find more birch trees, for example. In the lower parts of England, there's oak and beech and maple and ash and so on. Or at the riverside, you have poplar and willows. And they are all happy there. And that's the main thing. Happy trees make a good blood pressure.
make happy people that we can just literally head out. We don't even have to go and find a forest, that we can just head out to find a happy tree, take your book or your magazine or something, or just, you know, some switch off and yeah, enjoy the vibes. Do you think picking up on that atmosphere and lowering the blood pressure that you talk about, does that come from the gut? Because we know that so many of our neurotransmitters are affecting our mood and emotion through the gut. Is there a gut tree connection?
I don't know. And I think in many cases, the forest scientists have to say, I don't know. It's possible, because we know that our gut can smell, but we know also other things from our gut. For example, you have a whole ecosystem in your body, which trees also have. Meanwhile, biologists talk about holobionts. That means a complete ecosystem filled of thousands of different species. For example, in our guts, there are bacteria which are not connected to the gut, and they produce their own hormones to influence your brain. That are the bacteria in your gut. It's not the gut. We know that we are talking about a gut brain. That's one thing, but the gut belongs to your body. And the bacteria in the gut, they have their own strategies, and they influence your brain and what you're doing, your mood, for example. Because they're producing hormones. So, and what the tree communication, how the tree communication is influencing our body system, that's not known. If it is over the nose to the brain, or over the nose to our guts, or to the bacteria and back to our brain, we don't know that. But it's the only thing is we can measure a sinking blood pressure. But just to say that, I love the idea that it's the other way around. Our blood pressure is on a normal level out in the forest or under a happy tree. And when we go into a house, into an office, into the streets, then it's rising.
Yeah. And presumably the knock-on effect of that is also going to have an improvement on our immune system and helping to keep us well and healthy. I think that's become front of mind for so many of us during the last 18 months, especially. And are scientists looking at the immune system? Has there been any kind of markers studied on that?
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but what we know, that those killer cells that act against cancer cells, the amount is rising when you're in the forest. So there's also a direct effect on your
really?
Health. And trees can also suffer from similar things than COVID-19. So they have also virus diseases which are coming from global trade. Yeah, no one looks at this, because it's a tree, COVID-19. Okay, it was a tree pandemic. There are thousands of viruses brought in by global trade, and we don't know so far how trees are dealing with it, but we know that trees can become sick. The Humboldt University in Germany, for example, is doing research on that. We always concentrate on ourselves, which is okay during a pandemic, of course. I'm also happy that we are now mostly done with that. But trees deal also with problems like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, here in the UK, particularly, I'm down on a farm in the West Country, and, you know, we've had real issues with things like ash dieback. And it's just devastating to see the loss of certain species of trees, which may be lost to a country forever, potentially. I mean, are trees really endangered? We tend to think of endangered species being animals, but what does the future health look like for our trees on this planet?
Yeah, it's getting worse, of course, but trees can deal also with dangers like that. For example, the ash dieback, that's a little fungi causing this, brought from Asia, wheresoever. And the thing is that around about 5 to 10% of the ashes can deal with this disease and can recover. But we know not in advance which ash that will be. And what we see here, I don't know how it is in Britain, most foresters cut down those ashes before they are going to rot, because it's the timber is more worth when the tree is still, let's say, fresh. But by this way, you won't find out which of the ashes are able to deal with this infection. And what we do here in our forest range is we keep our hands out of the forest. We say let's struggle, let's do the ashes the struggle themselves, and we find more and more ashes which are healthy, which recover, and those seedlings can deal with those this ash dieback. So the only problem with diseases like this, and not in every case but in many cases, is that we always weaken the forest more, so that then the whole population may break down.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to natural immunity, doesn't it? And allowing the species there to recover, so that they're better able to defeat these diseases. Otherwise, if you take them all out and the ones left are weakened, we're going to have no ash trees left at all globally, because the disease will have won. So that's, interesting parallel for our times, I have to say. When we look at things like climate change, obviously there's a lot of discussion of the destruction of the Amazon rainforest, losing our trees being described as the lungs of the planet. You know, from your perspective, what role do trees play in climate change and in helping our way out of this?
That's an interesting question, because in the moment, forests are, for us, they are not just worse the way they are for their biodiversity. I like the comparison to a big cathedral, which is also no monetary value. And but of course, we need some economic markers to get it faster, the protection. And then we concentrate on carbon storage, which is wrong. We see it in the Amazon rainforest. Meanwhile, there's more gassing out of CO2 than storage. And but the main function of forest is the way they want to live. They want to cool down themselves. They want to have more rain clouds over them. And there's strong evidence that over such forests, there's a lot of more rain. The temperature, as I said, around about 10 degrees lower than the surrounding open land. And the forests don't do that for us. I think, I'm not sure if they have already recognized that we are here on this planet, because it's just 300,000 years. Yeah, so trees are very slow, but they're doing that for themselves. They create their own climate. And when we want to benefit from this, we have to reinstall intact, resilient forests. And as I know, if I'm right, in Britain, there's a new program to get bigger forests, big discussion which tree species one should take. Okay. And I can recommend only try to reinstall native forests with common tree species which used to be there, because when they are planted in plantations, then even oaks and beech trees will die from droughts or rising temperatures. But in intact forest, the outer temperature is not that important. It's important how the complete system cool itself down. And cities laying around or near or surrounded by such forests can become very much cooler and benefit from those forests.
That's fascinating. What do you mean by an intact forest?
Intact, of course, which is completely resilient, which is mostly untouched. That's the big question. for forestry for the next decades. How many timber may we take out before the system breaks down? And intact means that all functions work. For example, you need a lot of dead wood, which is working like a sponge and storing water and cooling also in hot summer days. We've seen that here in Germany after 3 months of drought, that the big trunks, dead trunks, are still full of water, and it's like it's a cooling function. And we know that when you have intact soil, and that's also very important. And when you, for example, when you drive with big machines on forest soil, it will be compressed, and the water storage goes down to 5%. And that's almost nothing left from rainfalls. The rainfalls flow over the ground into the next river and cause problems for the next cities. And the forest, but the forest need the storage of water. And as long as you don't disturb this ground storage by driving with big machines, the forests are able to store the winter rain for the summer. So it's not so important how much rain will fall in summertime, but how much will be stored from the wintertime rain.
Stored. Honestly, Peter, it's so fascinating. I can't let you go without asking you to name just a few of your favourite forests, perhaps, so that we might think in the future when we're able to travel more widely. Have you got favourites on your list that you could perhaps pass on to us that we might like to visit?
Yeah, there are many, many wonderful forests on Earth. I've not been to a tropical forest, so I just can tell you something about the Northern Hemisphere. For example, the Romanian beach forest, primeval beach forest. There you get a little imagination how Great Britain, how Western or Central Europe once looked like. And I think that's very important to see what we have lost. Because when we want to restore something, we should have an imagination what it should look like. And so I would recommend this forest. You can go to Białowieża in eastern Poland. Of course, wonderful forest in Germany. What I love in Britain, you have not the biggest forest in Europe, of course, but you have wonderful single trees all over the landscape, much more than I think every other country in Germany, in Europe. And that's very important to have also single trees wherever it is possible.
Gosh, that's really interesting. On my farm, I do have some fields that have, you know, one or two single beautiful, majestic oak trees standing. And I always think they look a bit lonely and you know, ought to have some friends planted nearby. But you're saying that they're important to have some single trees just standing on their own?
For the trees, it would be better to have more, of course. But oaks are able to stand on their own. And if you want to have more, then it would be easy to fence a little place around this oak in, so the old oak can grow its own seedlings. So we will have a little forest. And that's a new movement for cities, to create tiny forests, little nature spots.
Oh, I love that. Oh, Peter, honestly, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so very much for sharing. I hope that everybody is incredibly heartened and uplifted.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And encouraged by everything that we've talked about. Your book, The Heartbeat of Trees, is just lovely, highly recommended. And thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Liz. It was really a pleasure to talk to you.
And that is it for today's episode. Huge thanks to Peter. And as always, you will find all the links and the resources that we mentioned over on lizellewellbeing.com. And there you can sign up for the free weekly newsletter that comes out every Friday, filled with weekly tips for living well. And huge thanks to all of you who have left us such lovely reviews, especially on iTunes. It really does help others to find the show. And my small but mighty team here are extremely grateful. Thank you. So until the next time we chat, go well. Bye-bye. Liz Earle Wellbeing Show is presented by me, Liz Earle, with production by Amaryllis Earle and Harry Trevithick at Heart Dialogue, with thanks to my producer, Ellie Smith, and guest booker, Millie de la Morinière.